eastward west to northward south, comes in time in the cosmic salon. I'm niche, 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 and I'll be your companion as we slip into the liminal. Relax and sink in with an open mind and eye.
Come Let Go With Me. That's right. I have in the Cosmic Salon with me one of my now almost OG friends in the world of being around, Dan Shookus from Cosmic Keys, whom I love. Been on a journey with Dan myself, and you all have who followed his podcast and him. And we have, of course, crossed paths many times in the ethers as far as chatting out there in public, but we do have a private chat kind of relationship because we're real friends. And I am so glad to bring you on to the Cosmic Salon, my friend. I didn't realize that I hadn't had you on. That's the nature of just mixing my worlds. But welcome to the Cosmic Salon, Dan.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Nish. We were pre-chatting a little bit. This is my first interview in my new living situation. And it's an honor because, as you know, I listen to all your shows. I've been on Nox Mente and the Obelisk. And when you launched the Cosmic Salon, I became a fan of that too. So it's an honor to be here.
Yes. You've got your new living situation. We're in the new moon energy, the new year, the new normal.
The new world order, baby.
I was building right up to it. You got to the punchline. And so there doesn't need to be any formalities with us, because if people don't know by now, we have had these conversations and we're both having them on our separate channels out in the ethers and stuff. So we're getting into this. So with everything you see going and with these changes in your life right now, and congratulations, because I think this is a good move for you, at least at the moment. How are you feeling? What's going on in your world, Dan?
It's interesting because I look at things as an astrologer based on like seasons. And this Capricorn season has been wild for me. Basically, other than doing the podcast, The Cosmic Keys, I also play in a band called Moonstone Quill. And we play kind of like folky, bluegrassy, party, psychedelic music. Some people call us punk because we're like raw and sloppy, but it's kind of like Americana-esque. And I live out here in Summit County, Colorado, which is like a ski destination. And my day job is in vacation rentals and tourism. So I'm doing the podcast, I'm playing in a band, and my day job is tied in with kind of the seasons of tourism out here. And we just had a crazy Christmas with a blizzard to accompany it. And then a crazy New Year's with a blizzard to accompany it. And there's another blizzard coming tonight. So I've just been shoveling and running around and trying to make these guests give them a magical vacation mountain ski experience, which I'll own that. I love doing that. But on top of that, I am making a 2022 wall calendar that has all the astrology information, just like a normal wall calendar, but you know, on a certain day it'll say where the moon is and any aspects between the planets that go exact on that day. Llewellyn has a similar kind with very cheesy artwork. And it's been my vision to just do exactly what Llewellyn does with their astro calendar, but to have cool artwork. So for a good amount of time during this craziness, I was like burning the midnight oil to put the data in, and that was a hard thing to do, you know, just typing out every single aspect for every single day for a 365-day calendar. And then when I reach that milestone, I'm like, all right, I got X amount of time to finish it before 2022 hits. And then I had to do the artwork. And the artwork part is kind of like digital collage. I call it like vaporwave, where it's kind of, you know, kind of the collage-y style with like the Greco-Roman statues and stuff like that, and like nature and elemental stuff. I'll be open that I'm just copying a ton of people, because all real artists, they don't copy, they steal. So yeah, it's today I was working on that before talking to you. I'm in the middle of Cancer. So once I get to, you know, Sagittarius for the December part, then it's done. It's off to the presses, and I'm hoping to have it available by the end of the month. And it sucks because, you know, I should have had a 2022 calendar ready to roll on time, but I'm sticking with it, and I'm planning on doing it again in 2023. So this time around, and it's all a learning experience. Like, I started off with Capricorn. I don't know how to make a freaking collage vaporwave art. I know in my head what it should look like, but it's been trial and error. And now that I'm like further along, they're getting better and better. And I might have to go back and kind of fix the early ones now that I've kind of cut my teeth on the graphic designing part of it. So to answer your question, what's going on in my life? It's like hectic chaos. I moved very spontaneously, to a single studio now, but as like, because I play in a band, because I podcast, because I do artistic stuff, it's just like, to have roommates really fucks that up for me. And everything that's been happening has been on time astrologically too. The Saturn square Uranus event that happened right around Christmas. Saturn is in Aquarius right now, and that's my fourth house of the home. And me being an astrologer, I've tracked Saturn's movement through Aquarius, through my fourth house, which represents the home. And every time something happens with Saturn, something happens to my living situation. Like, I moved when he stationed retrograde, I moved when he stationed direct, and then the fight between me and a roommate occurred at that Uranus square. And then I very spontaneously, very synchronistically found this kind of like perfect setup to live in. And it wasn't convenient to be doing this as I'm getting slammed and working a 12-hour day shoveling snow for vacationers, and while I'm in the middle of moving. Like, to make the calendar is also a really high priority, because I need to get this thing out before the freaking year flies by. So yeah, it's been very, very busy and chaotic, and I'm in a very Capricorn way trying to reach this goal to just get it out in the month of January. I think I'm going to open up a pre-order this week, but yeah, it's chaotic and high strung and high energy and high speed, but I'm also just like, fuck yeah, let's ride this wave, let's shred this, and it's gonna pay off hopefully. So,
well, it's the first one, and I congratulate you on doing that, because I had tried to do that some years ago. I wanted to do that because I hate Llewellyn.
Yeah. But have you ever bought their calendar?
I have. I've had no choice. There have been years where,
yeah, that and I've wanted to make a solution to that problem. Because they're, as far as I know, they're really the only major one. And last year I would always buy it at Alchemy Arts. I don't know if they were around when you were in Chicago, but for 2 years I bought it at Alchemy Arts, just at a brick and mortar store. And then last year I was like, shit, I need to order that. And it was out of stock until like March.
Oh yeah.
So then I ended up getting Solar Fire, and it's just been like a long journey. But yes, the initial thing was like, I was pissed about having to hang that art in my house.
I know.
And I'm like, I want to make something that's dope. Yes. So it's kind of me as a very scorpionic person. I do a lot of things out of anger and spite. And
whatever gets it done. You know, one of the things I learned, I talked to a lot of people in the business, and you need to have your calendar ready in October. This next one just be ready by October, and you'll get the good New Year's, Christmas sales going, and you may go into more printings because of it.
So I was planning on mailing you a free one.
Excellent. I'll take it.
Yeah. So I'm doing that. I'm like, well, if no one buys it, I'm going to just mail these to everybody that I know. And
It's your first one.
And as you know, I went through a little astrological / spiritual / occult crisis in the fall. So that made me stop doing astrology and also just made me not do the calendar. So it took getting over that hump to start the calendar. And then I was like, it's kind of realistic for me to finish it before January 1st. And I got pretty far. Like today's the 4th, so whatever. It's gonna be a little late, but
what matters is that you're on the train, and this is the first one, and this is the experience. Now you know what to expect and how much time it takes for that data entry. Some people may not know, but you are a bona fide artist, and so when you say borrowing from other people, you are actually an artist in the real world, and you had a whole thing going on with art. And we've talked about that in the past, and people that listen to you also know this. So it's not like you're just coming out and all of a sudden you're a visual artist. You have a good eye. And that's what excites me about it. I know it's going to be really cool. So like I said, I can't wait. Next year is going to be an awesome calendar. I just know it. I know it. And you make things happen. You do make things happen.
Out of anger and spite, yeah.
Yes, as you were just saying. This is the fuel or the muse, whatever, however you want it.
Your
muse is a dominatrix.
Well, the muse comes, and then the muse is like, have fun working. Then it's like, how do I fuel that fire? I'm like, anger and spite, yes.
Like, the muse is like, work harder, worm.
It can be like that for sure.
So one of the things I wanted to visit with you was when I last had a chat with you, which was a really great chat. I got so much great feedback on that one with us. So you had reached out, you were having this crossroad, you were at a crossroad, and you were just putting it all down. You were going back to Jesus. And so it was a whole thing. We interacted a lot in there, and then by the time we actually recorded, you had worked through this glitch, and it brings you kind of, you know, more or less to where you are now. But I want to talk about that here in the Cosmic Salon. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about it with the idea that now you have some space between all that and what happened. So you have some hindsight perspective. So what happened? Why did you feel that you needed Jesus?
Well, it's
there's take a thing you to the river, baby.
Yeah, there's some. Well, so I was raised Catholic, and then got really into everything. I don't know, New Agey, occult, everything. You know, I'm a seeker. I'm a spiritual adventurer. The programming is just there with the Christian stuff. There's been multiple times in my journey where all of a sudden I'm like, what if everything in the Bible is Bible truth? What if everything outside of Christianity is simply Lucifer or the devil or whatever? What if all of the occult is Lucifer? What if all of the New Age is Lucifer? And I usually just sit with that question. What if, how do I test whether these alternative spiritual things are good or bad? And it's usually kind of hovering up in my mental space. It's like very black and white, you know, good, bad, dualistic, you know, right brain, left brain. And then typically, I just have to sit with that for a while, back and forth, and say, Is this the devil? Is that the devil? Is this evil? Is that evil? And it's weird because like every day in this world we're in, evil is becoming more apparent. So,
yes,
you know, it's tricky when you see the world going full Book of Revelations and then step back and try to get your bearings. And it's very, you know, when we talked, I was never like dead serious, like that's the devil. It was more like, yeah, this is shady. What do I think about that? That they're kind of sketchy. That person is kind of compromised. This idea was originated from Aleister Crowley, you know, so it's usually just at the period where I stop and freeze up and I'm just like, all right, you know, it's fear-based. That's what I can say in hindsight, that it was fear-based. And when you kind of put on the lens of a, like an evangelical Christian, not just like a lukewarm Christian, because these new age to Jesus, like Doreen Virtue type people do renouncements of everything. In hindsight, you're like, dang, when you're away from it long enough, you're like, dang, I'm glad I'm not, you know, swimming in fear every day, looking at everything and analyzing, is that evil? And you still should. Discernment is still the most important thing, but I was exercising my discernment in questioning all that stuff. And, the conclusion I usually come to is kind of like kind of what you alluded to when we talked, Nish, is like I was saying, this is all mental, black and white, good and evil, up in my headspace. But eventually you have that heart-based, almost muse-like, like mystical God experience that's like, no. Like this, you're good. Here I am. Here I am. Like, that's like God talking to me, like, here I am, you know, don't worry. It's cool. Like this little moment of this little rocky road led you here. Here's this little blissful God experience. Now I'm going to throw you in this other direction. So it's definitely like a stop along the way. And it's interesting because it was based on kind of like a lot of people. There's a lot of these people out there that are having their new age to Jesus thing, some of whom like I'm friends with, like internet friends the way me and you are. And they've maintained like, they're like, hey, I'm not crazy Christian yet, but I'm like, these are my people. These new age to Jesus people are my people. And then like when you see the new age to Jesus people, it's like, am I getting triggered by this? Cause sometimes I am, sometimes I'm like, shut the fuck up. Like not everything is demons. Not everything is out to get you. Like you're really like, I get pissed at the new age to Jesus people. So it's making me think of that herd mentality or the way like things sweep through the crowd. And all of a sudden, like all these so-called new agers, and a lot of people have reached out to me behind the scenes who are some like prominent people. They're like, it sounds like I'm going through the same thing you're going through, Dan. I'm like, yeah, what the fuck's going on? And I'm like, well, did you start thinking this way because you were following so-and-so? Yes. And it's like, it's kind of like this viral movement. And there's like, I don't know, like as you know, I'm like very bohemian, very like out there, weird freak. But I think being a freak these days is kind of like being uber traditionalist. And I'm kind of like leaning into like, yeah, I want to live like a traditional, like almost conservative lifestyle, and like to go against this fuckery that says don't do that. So yeah, there's lots of things that I still like about the Christians, and Christianity and Jesus in particular. But if Jesus is like, I hear Christians say like, Jesus is just everything. If he is the Alpha and the Omega, it's just like, I don't know. I don't see it as this like mental game where I have to like walk through the world and like think in terms of massive good and massive evil. I think it's just being more like open to like that alpha omega, like real God on earth spirit of Christ. And when I do, it doesn't make me, I don't know, it doesn't make me feel compelled to go to church or to study the Old Testament even. It makes me just feel just basic stuff like the golden rule and be a good person and forgive. Because like I was saying, I'm very spiteful and it's hard for me to forgive, but that's kind of the gold in it, I guess.
Yeah, there's so much to say here. And you know, I'm a rebel too, for different reasons. And you know my chart. It's interesting. I wasn't actually aware that this movement was so big, from New Age to Jesus, Lord. And it's interesting. And you know, what's funny is I felt the wave come over, because all of a sudden I'm knee deep in the Bible. And like I have said from the beginning, I think it's a, you know, I view it as a grimoire, and I view it as a highly edited one at that. And I think everyone can agree that it's highly edited, especially when we start looking at versions like the King James and all this. And so, or the Gideon, I mean, all of them, they're highly edited. And what's the bias? When you start having edits, well, what's the bias? And one of the things that started to become very apparent to me was in my journey, in my specific journey with the Bible, was moving backwards in time, which I enjoy doing, and getting to some of the great thinkers, the great philosophers, and moving into some of the other tomes and starting to do some correlation and digging into historical stories and narratives, and it all starts to kind of paint a different photo or a picture or painting. It creates something more. And then I had even more questions than I had before I knew anything about the canon and the wonderful apocryphal stuff. And who knows, Dan, what's really out there that was edited out, say, in the hands of the Vatican. And Of course, we encounter all kinds of crazy nastiness from, say, the Catholic Church, like with the French Huguenot massacre that started with Louis the 14th in France. And I have direct relatives that were French Huguenots that had to escape into Switzerland, and then they came over here during the 1600s. And so it's an interesting tale. And what's the plight of the Huguenots? The Huguenots said they want they persecuted them almost to extinction at that time, because their plight was that the Bible should not be written in Latin. It should be written in people's indigenous languages of wherever they are, so that they can have a direct contact to the Word of God. And the Vatican maintained that it needs to be in Latin so that you can have your priest or hierarchical church member that's taught Latin as your gatekeeper to the Word of God. And this is, you know, this is threatening. And we see this in the apocryphal work, like with the Gospel of Thomas and others. And so there's something about that really sparks the rebel. But then when I understood my genealogy also, that I come from people that are rebelling against this idea, in my genes, in my genetic coding, there's a lot of, I don't need gatekeepers, period. There's a lot of persecution going on. And then I also come, you know, in my genealogy, there are also a lot of lines that were in charge of people, but they were a lot of radicals within those lines as well. And so it's just interesting looking at how our genealogy informs us as to who we are now, especially when we start looking at the idea of sentient DNA and sentience within the DNA structure. And DNA is a neurosentience. And I find that started to awaken the idea of the Bible for me in a whole different way, when I started to see that there are usurpers all through it. And these stories at the core started to talk about these things, that the stories that a lot of people are holding, this idea of God is the bigger idea. And so the whole idea of Jesus, don't get me wrong, I love me some Jesus, you know, I love me some Jesus. But I don't know really that the Jesus people are talking about is the Jesus they think they're talking about. And I came to, I've always had a different view of Jesus, and that information has been brought forward with other places. You know, I believe Jesus is not at all what people think he is. And I believe that bloodline of Jesus is very telling. However, what I want to get at here is that there's a source. Jesus represented a lineage from a source. What's the source? And that's where I'm always going. I'm always following the blood to the source. Where's the river to the spring, you know, and not to the ocean? Where is it? Where's this water springing forth from? And that's what led me into a deeper understanding of some of the very esoteric and deep Christianity that is out there. We can call it a lot of different stuff. Ironically, it led me to understand the stuff that my father practiced. And he always has been a Coptic Christian. And I never really understood that. And it also, when I met him and when I was younger, and he was insistent on making that distinction, he wasn't a Christian, he was a Coptic Christian, I had no concept of what that was. And I didn't want to know, and I wasn't interested at the same time, like a wild horse. I didn't want to be broken or trained, and he didn't push it on me. I think he appreciated that wildness in me. But I came to understand that the Coptics really have a lot going, and only recently have I found that some of those deeper esoteric Christians, there's a lot going on there, which gave me a lot more respect for my papa.
Coptic, isn't that like something in Egypt? Am I thinking of that right?
Yes. It's its own follow the breadcrumbs, and you might find that interesting. There's a lot to be said in there, and I am not an aficionado in any of this. I'm just a seeker like you, but I thought it was one thing, and then when I started to follow the breadcrumbs, I learned that it's something completely different than what I had thought. I also thought somehow that it was tied into Jamaican culture, and it does have a tie into Jamaican culture, but not in the way that I thought on a surface level. So I'm going to just leave those breadcrumbs out because I don't know enough to speak intelligently upon it. I'm learning more as I go. But that said, I didn't want to be a person that was throwing the baby out with the bathwater. There's a lot here.
Yeah.
There's a lot here to chew on. There's a lot here to dig at and find the real mysteries. And there's a lot of effort that has gone into covering up these mysteries and gatekeepers to these mysteries. And that's what I'm interested in. I'm not about to go and proclaim myself a parishioner of any church on this planet, and I should say in this realm, because my connection to source is extremely tight. I have a very tight connection to source energy, and people may want to call that God, and I am fine with that. I have no problem with that. And when I'm singing, humming spirituals around the house, a la my own style, that's what I'm connecting with. And so that's where I'm at with it. I have no knee-jerk response like I didn't before, but I wanted to know more. And now at this point where I am, the deeper I've pushed in, the more I realize there's a lot of mysterious stuff that a lot of people out there that are digging around aren't talking about. I don't hear much talk about the Coptics. I hear it here and there in the Gnostic circles and stuff like that. But I'm finding myself having to do some real deep research. So there are, you know, it's out there. You can type it in, and there's, of course, there's stuff out there, but you can type anything in. You can type in flat earth, and the first thing that comes up is the Flat Earth Society, which is a complete shill organization. it's just like you go in, you're like knee-jerking with this is all crap, just like the Flat Earth Society. It's all crap. But there are a lot of Flat Earth people out there that have a lot of credible information. Now, I am of the toroid family and of the Ether Tesla family. That's like my lean. And so, you know, those are other breadcrumbs. But what do you think ultimately with all this stuff, like the deeper mysteries, when you strip away Jesus and when you strip away the Vatican and when you strip away the gatekeepers?
So I think that whatever happened with Jesus, the man, had major spiritual significance. Just that sacrifice that the Christians say God sacrificed his only son to die for our sins. Like, when you say that statement, one thing might come to mind, but I'm more concerned with just what happened after Jesus died, or he rose from the dead, but after he went away. I see it as an underground movement with like charisma and like a wave sweeping through the earth because of this event where Jesus died on the cross. I do believe that, like, whatever happened after the life of Jesus was a wave. And I think all of the negative stuff that comes with like the Catholic Church or whatever the Orthodox churches were, like, those people were just in support of that wave, but also containing that wave. But I'm just of the opinion that, like, the world before Christ was totally different, with different rules, or it was a different realm before Christ came. And I feel like I have genetic memory, or just memory of that. Like, that's what they called paganism. Like, and I think it's so interesting that, like, the Romans are such a big part of the New Testament story from the beginning, like from the Nativity, the Romans are coming out to kill the baby Jesus. And then at the end, when they kill Jesus, the Romans are involved. And, like, we know Rome was real according to our history. And what was Rome? It's like Rome was the New World Order of that time. And it seems like we're in such Roman times now. And whatever the world was like back then, it doesn't seem freaking pretty. I mean, we have like the Colosseums, we have wars, we have colonization, we have this crazy shit. We have like the aristocracy on steroids. Like, we know the elites are probably raping, killing, and eating babies today. But, like, back then, it really seems plausible that that was going on. So I just see it as, like, at the time, because of Rome, there was lots and lots of real wickedness going on. And then Jesus came, and then this wave swept through. And it's interesting, like, there's so much shadiness and cover-ups and gatekeeping and not telling the whole story and dualistic things that Christianity became. But I still think that wave is being felt today. And I think it is going to come back. Like, that Christians say Jesus is going to come back, but, like, it's when we hit this rock bottom point that this wave comes through the underground. And then it's like, I love the idea of them just being like, we're spreading the good news that this thing happened, and, like, it's sweeping the globe, and you don't have to worry anymore. And maybe that's all Christianity is like this, like, wave of deprogramming from this, like, elite, satanic, wicked world, and people just doing, like, the basic things, like, holy crap, like, love thy neighbor, let's all get along, forgive each other, like, not this, like, pyramid scheme, fucked up, like, order that the New World Order kind of represents. So I don't know. That's kind of what I think.
Let's look at a couple things here. So we have the idea of the sacrificial son. It's a key in that mystery. So you made a comment about besides the obvious. So when you're talking about besides the obvious, what is the obvious with that?
With the sacrifice, you mean?
The sacrificial son God sent, begot.
Well, I think the obvious is like, there's this guy, God, read the Old Testament to get to know him. And he's kind of a crazy tyrant who is like leading this ethnic group through the desert, through this destiny. Then this crazy guy, God, gives us his son. And we have to sacrifice him to make up for how bad we are. And so I think on the surface level, it's like, yeah, you stupid pleb, like Sky Daddy is giving you your one chance. Here's his son that he murdered or that he wanted sacrificed for your stupid ass. Like that's what I pick up when I hear the obvious story. But I think the maybe non-obvious story is like, it's more just like this event that occurred had such a vibrational effect on the world, and we're still feeling it today. And it's like this myth or this, it's like something divine flowed to the earth through this crazy event where a good man, good like Messiah type person was killed off by the New World Order of that time. And like his memory or his spirit just sweeps over all the wickedness and the ugliness, and humans are in a different, like higher vibration, not like the bloodthirsty gladiator, Roman, pagan, ancient past, like this different thing. And so I just, the story, like I would just want to hear Christians be like they will talk about God as like a pissed off sky daddy, and you better listen to him. Like that's not far-fetched, you know? So I don't like, yeah, it has mythological power to tell a story in that way. But I think it's more so this event with this man, Jesus, who was here. I do think it's kind of possible to say that was like God on earth, and that this him coming here changed everything and made everything level up. And then also me as an astrologer, knowing the cyclical nature of things, they say Christ died, risen, and he will come again. So it's that this is cyclical. But yeah, the thing that the less obvious thing is that it's a cyclical wave of divine download, divine waves that come just at the right time through divine planning, through God's will. And then they spread like wildfire across the planet. But the obvious story is no, Sky Daddy gave us his son, killed him. Your sins are forgiven, but you're still a sinning scum, you know, child of Adam and Eve, who were the first sinners, you little bad boys and girls. Like and through all this Christian exploration, exactly what I just said sarcastically, people don't say it sarcastically. They say, this is the reality, deal with it. And I can kind of respect that. It's kind of true in certain ways. We are sinners. We, by our very nature, can't escape it. And the divine caused this event when Jesus was here and gave us a better deal. But maybe it's just like the mythological way of like framing it, like pissed off Yahweh gave us like hippie long hair, nice guy. And, you're still nothing. You're still a sinner, but thank God he gave us his one son. So I don't know. I don't know if that makes any sense. I'm kind of just thinking out loud.
Well, let me put my two cents in here. One of the things that I've always had a couple bumps in the road with some of the the Christian narrative. And this is one of them that you brought up. And I haven't talked about this a lot. I've talked about the Lucifer stuff a lot. So when we look at the word sacrifice, and I have it here, and just to prove, I have...
Sacrifice.
Did you hear that?
I heard you talking, but...
Okay, so I played it on that thing, but I have the dictionary version of it, not the old dictionary version of it, because we do need hard copy old versions because everything's highly edited now. But online, it is, of course, a noun, and it, which is funny, it's a verb and a noun, but so in one form, it's an act of slaughtering an animal or person or surrendering a possession as an offering to God or to a divine or supernatural figure. They offer sacrifices to the spirits. And then in the verb form, to offer or kill as a religious sacrifice, the goat was sacrificed at the shrine. So I'm bringing this up because I find it interesting when we think about that passage about God, and I don't, there are different translations of it and all that, but suffice it to say, it's agreed upon generally that he offered his only son to be sacrificed and take on our sins. But what really, when we look at the word sacrifice, you're sacrificing to something. So he's sacrificing to the humans. What is Jesus being sacrificed to? I'm asking you that as a question.
I think to the humans. I've never really thought about it like that, but like, yeah, because you don't say who is receiving the sacrifice. I think it's to the humans, but I don't know if I'm wrong about that.
The sacrificial lamb. I mean, we hear that a lot. And it's interesting.
That's weird because that would put the human masses in this like receptive, like God form, which is weird because it's like, that's a hard question because it's not like God is sacrificing his son to himself. Because like, who's getting the louche out of the sacrifice, you know?
Well, we know who's getting the louche from the stories. And so clearly the Romans. And so it's clearly everyone who participated in it. My bird has decided to act up. Clearly everyone who participated in it is getting some louche. And we have all of the magical accoutrement behind it. This sphere of destiny, you know, the whole idea of the crown of thorns and the shroud of Turin. My bird. And it's... I know that neither one of us are biblical scholars, but sometimes I'm leery of them anyway, because they all seem to have a slant and I don't, I'm just trying to get at the core here, but what is that? I'm very intrigued with the idea of Lazarus. And you know, I believe Jesus is not what we're told Jesus is. And I do believe in the Magdalene bloodline. And so when you think about the Magdalene bloodline, what does that make you think?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is just the weird fact that I'm just reflecting on my own timeline. And I went to Catholic grade school and then public high school. And my family is, I mean, we're like, I don't even want to say ethnic, but like we're all like from Chicago and go and having a church and a parish and a culture. It's a cultural thing that both sides of my family were all about, I would say. But I'm just reflecting on the Magdalene thing that was introduced to me as a teenager in high school through the Da Vinci Code. And it was just really weird at that time when that came out. Like, I remember when I was in junior high, the Catholic Church had the pedophile thing exposed for the first time. And I was like in like seventh and eighth grade and we're just like awkward. Like, here we are at this Catholic school. What the fuck? And honestly, before I ever heard about that, I didn't experience anything like that or hear stories about anything of like priest bad behavior. until like that story broke. Then I went to public school and was like partying and freaking drinking and smoking pot on the weekends. And my parents would still make me go to church. And then this like cultural thing, the Da Vinci Code, hit the scene, and they were talking about it at church, and they were talking, my parents read it. I read it at the time. And, that's the first thing that comes to mind, was like people, I guess people of my age and my background, the Da Vinci Code hit at a very like ripe time. And when I'm thinking about my larger Christian thing, like that was kind of my first red pill of being like, yeah, everything you thought you know about Christianity is not what it seems. It's more secretive. It's more occult. There's more mystery. And that book, you know, back in like 2003, 2004, or whenever it was out, got people thinking about the mysteries of the occult, or like the Magdalene bloodline, stuff like that. And then it triggers all these other questions, like Jesus was a man, but like, did he have a wife? What's up with Mary Magdalene being mentioned in these texts, but also not really explained? There's so much stuff in that Bible that is just not explained. Like, why don't you have a full chapter on hell and the devil and all of these things that you use in your religion? Why is it like a few random lines and a few random books? But with the bloodline of Jesus and all of that, like, it just evokes to me this like weird genetic memory of like the medieval times when Christianity was way different than what I saw in like the Vatican II mass in English in a suburb of Chicago. And the reason I'm there is because of the countries that my like great, great grandparents came from, which was like Ireland and Lithuania, which are two Catholic countries. So talking to you, just kind of rambling with you about this niche, is just making me think like the line from that event of the death of Jesus to today, and that wave of whatever Christ is, has gone through so many freaking like doorways, and there's been dead ends, and there's been things blocked off. But it's just crazy to even just think about the medieval Catholic stuff to like Vatican II today. Like, you know, when you're thinking about these things, it's really just like paganism evolving to be more Christian or like golden rule based. And I don't know. I'm just rambling at this point.
Well, when we think about bloodlines, we think about a genetic history. We think about an inheritance. And of course, the Magdalene bloodline didn't start with Jesus. It came from somewhere else, right? Jesus came into this bloodline. Of course, he was the Son of God.
Well, they do talk about Jesus's family tree going, or how Joseph was related to King David. Like that's relevant. They put it in the Bible.
Yes.
But I thought God was Jesus's father, you know, like there's some, talking about this with you is kind of frustrating me, because there's all these like unexplained concepts that don't always jive. Like, who was Joseph? Like, does he have any genetic, relation to Jesus, or like what? Yeah.
Well, this is why I'm always talking about the false light God, and that Christianity, the Christian mythos, is born of a distortion in, let's say, the original emanation that was birthed into the ether. And from that, we have a lot of territory we could cover, but I'm just posing questions right now. And so The Son of God is a very interesting term. Of course, we could take this in so many different directions there's always the psychological breakdown, but psychology has done no favor to theology in the end, in my opinion. When I personally speak of psychology, I speak of depth psychology. The rest of it is just, it's poppycock to me. And then, of course, to me, the father of depth psychology is Jung, not the Jungians. Most Jungians I just am not pulling up to. They're usually swishy, very well-to-do people living in gated communities. And
in Evanston, Illinois, maybe.
Oh, there's so many there. And I mean, sadly,
in a mansion with a Black Lives Matter like yard sign.
Yes. And so I've just encountered so many having been around so long. And it became a self-fulfilling prophecy of Jung's. You know, he put it out there, emanated into the world, and then it became. Anyway, so there's that. I want to get that out there, that there's something going on there with the mythos, certainly. And when we look at some of the pagan rites that go on, and we see this in a lot of, we see this across the board, really, the idea of we have to see this. Right? Death and rebirth is the name of the game. The name of the game is death and rebirth. That's what happens. We're in here, we die, we get reborn into something, and born again Christians get born again. And then there's in the Bible the second death and the first death, and all these ideas of more than one death, more than one life. There's a conscious life.
More than one birth.
More than one birth. There's all these ideas of reverberations or emanations. And I find that can lead us somewhere if we allow that to lead us somewhere. And one of the things that I love is that term, the devil's in the details. Because sure enough, whatever you want to say, and this is just the ubiquitous devil. It's not like a Satan head or a Lucifer head. And of course, I still propose that Lucifer is not the bad guy. But it's just the devil representing a bunch of bureaucratic bullshit, a bunch of red tape, a bunch of lawyer speak, a bunch of pimp talk. That's the devil. Mm-hmm. The devil, and when we ascribe the devil as details, you get an idea right there of what the nature of the devil is. And of course, that plays out with the mythos of demonology as well. You have to know its proper name to have control over it. All the trickery that goes on with all this, the tricksters. And they have a sacred role, and they belong just as much as anything else does. It's just good to know what they are and what their function is, just like understanding a rattlesnake in the woods. You know, rattle, stay away. You know, leave it alone. And so when we talk about the devil and the details of this kind of thing, this is where all of a sudden we get the religion fuckery. We get gatekeepers. We get
Saturn.
Soothsayers, yeah. All of that, you know, snake oil salesmen, all of that kind of stuff that's muckety muck that people can easily get caught up into. And usually these are charismatic types. And I think there's an idea there with the whole idea of charismatic Christians. And don't get me wrong, I really love the energy of the charismatics. I find it fascinating. I love it. It's they give you a show. And they're having their ecstatic religious experience. I'm not taking that from them. I'm just saying they really do present something dynamic. And in fact, I think it's so much more dynamic and exciting than, say, the Protestants that seem to be a little bit more scrubbed and dry and
vanilla. And
very vanilla. Very, very vanilla. But I love vanilla, too. And so,
yeah. You
know, it's all
pretty vanilla sometimes.
Right? And so all these things, all these flavors have a place. It's just that when we start coming into a point of joining in and becoming part of a cult of something, a cult of personality, a cult of color, a cult of religion, a cult of music, whatever. When you start coming in with that idea of this is really cool, I'm joining this this group. And then within this group, then you find usually that's where all the stories start happening. Look at the Moonies and look at all these other stories of just craziness. We could talk about politics under this heading. And one of the things that I learned from the Bible, that I learned from the tales of Jesus, is Jesus. I love singing the name Jesus. It really makes me happy. And it just does. Is that this idea of being wise, be alone. Choose, you know, keep things close to your vest. Don't get caught up in gatekeepers, really question things. You know, who's taxing you? Why are they taxing you? Are you really allowing people to control your life at this level? And stuff like that, these bigger ideas that the mythos of Christ brought forward. I mean, absolutely radical, 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 beautiful stuff that I ascribe to.
That like you're even just like from a caste system or a class system. He was talking to everybody, all humans, not the untouched, not like the elites or versus like the untouchables or whatever. He was talking to everybody.
And it's amazing. And the fact that, you know, here we are still. This is, you know, reactivation because, you know, what about taxes, right? I mean, we in America, our American culture, and I'm sorry for people that just now immigrated and are going through that process, whatever. I'm talking about the original peoples, and I'm talking about pre-slavery, even though some of them were slaves when they came over here. Let's not forget the Irish. The word is indentured and enslaved. And anyway, people were fighting to get away from that, to get a sense of freedom. Mm-hmm. They were coming because they were being persecuted for all kinds of different things. They wanted to own their own property without being taxed to all hell. They, you know, so why is it that the nobles get to own their property and no taxes? People are asking this. Why did they have to be taxed to death? Why is it that these groups of people can worship what they want, but the common folk can't? And the common folk are not allowed to have access to the Word of God, for example, etc. And of course, we can apply modern day stuff to all of that and make it modern. You know, I should be able to sleep with who I want. I should be able to think what I want in modern terms. And because some of that stuff was just not as open, but in the ancient world, that stuff was there. We see this with the Greeks and the Romans, that the homosexuality was common. They had boys, they had young boys. And whether it's right or wrong, that's not the discussion here. This stuff is written all over. And most of these masters, fathers of the church, I mean, look at Muhammad, seriously. What is going on with that?
Or even like Plato.
Well, Plato too, but I'm, you know, Plato doesn't have like the big cult that Muhammad has. And, you know, what 13-year-old or something. I mean, come on. If you start scrutinizing these tales.
Even in the, just to go back to that, even the Ganymede, who's the Aquarius constellation, it's like a boy. And it's like Zeus was so pleased by him that he snatched him up in the form of an eagle and made him his cupbearer. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, that's like Aquarius.
Yes, and cupbearer, hello. So, you know, the cup is the chalice, is the vessel, hello. You know, I mean, these things are, they're everywhere throughout this realm, and they're throughout all the mythos that go on. And so the fact that we're still processing through all this stuff is kind of a sad story to me. It's the fact that whatever the idea of time is, we're still dealing with these same issues. And no matter how far the renegades run, the system seems to follow them. The system seems to follow good people trying to get away from bad people. And what I mean by that is good people in that they just want their freedom to live their lives without having thugs come in and say they can't set up shop here, they can't own this, they can't own that, they got to get a cut here. And that's where we are. And it's no surprise to me that things are as dire as they are. And this is without all my woo.
Yeah, they really are. And it just, all this talk, even when we're going back to Rome, you know, in the world that Jesus entered this world into, you know, it's like when we study conspiracy and we start thinking about the elites and who they are and how they operate, at a certain point you hear A, that the elites collaborate with organized crime or like the quote unquote mafia, and B, even if they don't, they operate like a mafia. So when we're talking about this like wicked world we're in, it's really just a world full of thugs who are, it's organized crime. Like the top people, it's organized crime. The top religions, organized crime. And I don't know. We just
and
have to.
Very intelligently organized. Because look at, they apply all of the rules to warfare and enslavement that anyone can have access to right now. You can go buy the book 48 Laws of Power or Sun Tzu's Art of War. I mean, you can get all the information. You can go study Tavistock. You can go and educate yourself in how it is that one set of people can enslave another set of people and get them to pay for their enslavement. Mm-hmm. That is what's fucked up here. And it amazes me.
I think that's that structure is what comes to mind when I think of like, this is Satan's realm, or like when the Christians say like, Satan is the prince of this earth. Like, I think the fact that most things at a high level are structured that way, like a mob, like a mafia, I think that's what's true. That's what the Christians say, which is true. And even that quote from St. Peter, where it's like, you deal not with whatever, like the powers of this earth, the powers and the principalities. We're dealing with like a hierarchy in the spirit realm of evil, unseen forces that have hierarchical structure. I think, you know, I think that's what we're dealing with here. And like today, it's so freaking obvious and gross to look at.
It is gross. So we're going to end this first hour on this note, and then we're going to come back for the second hour. So, Dan, how do people find you in the world?
CosmicKeysPodcast.com. I'm going to update it and get the calendar pre-order. So, yeah, just check me out there.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us for this first hour, and we'll see you on the other side. And there he goes. Dan Shukas from the Cosmic Keys Podcast. I would like to thank the producers of this show, Christy Tesmer, Yogi Chander, Eric Peterson, Jason Lamson, J.H. Armstrong, Luis B., Marcy Shapiro, Mark Betcher, Melanie Poe, Michael Wachter, Michael Watts, Neil McNaughton, Noelle Jeanette, Santa Rebecca, Still Fiona, Babs Arbonnetter, and JJ Queen Reine de Blanc Jewelry, as well as all the other patrons through Patreon that make this program possible. Thank you so much. And I want to remind you that we are not biblical scholars. We're just seekers. We're asking questions. And we're allowing our internal knowing to guide us. This is a lot of fun for me, the journey. Finding my way into strange alleys and corners and pathways of wandering and pondering what's possible, what's happening, what's going on, where are we, why are we? All the great questions. And so with that, I want to remind you to dream. Dream yourself awake. Dream yourself alive. Dream yourself lucid. And I thank you for being lucid here with me in the Cosmic Salon.